Hello, welcome to Growing Wild. I'm Charlotte Petts, and it is lovely to have you back here with me again. On this, the third of this little run of four episodes, I am speaking with gold-winning garden designer Charlotte Harris. Charlotte is due to be doing another garden this year for Chelsea, alongside her design partner Hugo Bug. And as you may probably know, it got moved from last year, from last May, and then from this May to September later in this year. And yeah, people are generally hopeful that it will be able to go ahead in September. Now, I know Charlotte to be somebody who really needs and relishes the vastness of nature and landscape. So I just really wanted to catch up with her and see how she's coped over the last year, being majoritively based in the very urban setting of East London.
So we last spoke in a cupboard in your office in London, and it was just before you did your first ever Chelsea garden on Main Avenue, and you were nervous and downing Rescue Remedy on to Solidly.
And the rest.
And the rest, yeah.
I called it Rescue Remedy.
Right. It was like your
first
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was 2017, mate. That's crazy. 4 years ago.
It sort of feels like, it doesn't feel 4 years ago, and yet it feels like a lifetime ago. Yeah.
Quite a lot has changed for you.
Well, yeah. Oh, well, for me, yeah. But also
yeah, and generally you know, in the world. I'd just like to point out also you won a gold medal at that Chelsea. So.
Yeah. And I cried a lot. And when I won the gold medal, I literally wept and snotted and then thought, oh, that wasn't very cool. But it was amazing to have people like you as part of that, planting that garden, and friends being supportive. And I think we have a really amazing sector, and everybody at Chelsea really wants everyone else to do well. I think the great thing about the sort of how the medals are awarded is there are no finite medals. Everyone can get a gold, or everyone can get silver gilt, and it is down to you to do the exceptional, do your best. You know, it doesn't have that sort of nasty competitive undertone, I don't think. I don't know how you felt it was, but I don't feel that.
No, I mean, you can tell people sort of come by and scope out what you're doing.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, oh, yeah. And but it's kind of fun. It feels... it would feel completely different if there were a finite amount of gold medals. Yeah. It would change it entirely, wouldn't it?
I think it would, yes. Yeah. And I think, you know, for every show I've worked on planting, we had it, and other people asked us as well. You know, there's always people going around right at the end. They may have had a few plants that they wanted, or they want a couple of kind of sparkling little ephemeral moments. And everyone says, oh, look, have you got any of those irises left? Or, you know, can I nab a couple of bits of those beautiful umbels? And I think there is that sort of generosity of spirit, and I'm not sure. And I think that's the great thing about it. And I think that's true of all our sector in different ways. I just think it's a very generous, kind, collaborative kind of sector of people who love what they do and are passionate about what they do. So for Chelsea to be any different would be weird. But yeah, it was pretty amazing. When I had that chat with you in the cupboard in the studio, so that everyone realizes there's no glamorous life. We were in a stationary cupboard. That's the only place that we could get any quiet. And I was having quite a tough time, because you are sort of really putting yourself out there, and you're at that funny moment where you're sort of too near to it to make any substantive changes. And too far away to be rolling up your sleeves and just getting on with it. And it's really tough. And yeah, it's really exposing. You think, oh, everyone is going to find out I'm useless. And it is a really important part of the creative process, but it feels like a really bloody awful part of it.
It's brutal.
It was the most grueling thing I've done professionally and physically. And there was a lot of other things going on in my life. And it felt wonderful as well. So, and then... during that Chelsea, or just in the run up to it, I had been working quite informally with Hugo Bug. I'd known him probably about 3 years, and I'd started helping him as a freelancer for him on a project he had in Jordan, an amazing botanic garden that he was master planning. And we got to be very good friends. And then we just found we were asking each other questions about projects informally. And we just got to a point where we thought, why are we doing this informally? And neither of us particularly wanted to have a kind of single name practice. We wanted a practice where we did really brilliant work and we stretched out of our comfort zone, perhaps. And sometimes it takes another person to do that, to challenge you. And I'm in great awe of people who can do that on their own. I think that takes an amazing fortitude of character. But I really love my sort of collaborative relationship with Hugo. And I guess because we had done this professional dating for 3 years, we then did a professional moving in. And when we merged our practices, and we sort of announced that at Chelsea as well, which seemed like the right thing to do.
Yeah, you
and
did. Yeah.
He's sort of this very special soul who loves to see other people do well and is really supportive and positive. And he was, I think there are a couple of people I would not have got through that Chelsea with. You know, there was an awful lot of people I wouldn't have got to where we did at Chelsea and get a goal, because it is a group effort. Yeah. There were loads of people involved, amazing people like yourself, Alison, Hannah, you know, Anna, Lisa, lots of amazing plants people, then the contractors, associate, you know, there's all sorts of people who make that project work. But really it was my friend Jamie Bradley who had been working with me on it and ended up being this amazing, he's an amazing artist, and you met him obviously, but
yeah, and he went above and beyond. He was incredible.
Yeah. And he also was doing things like when our boulders got scratched by forklifts, he had his paintbrush out and was painting all the little things that you don't realize happen. It's a theatre set, Chelsea.
Yeah.
It's a theatre set. So definitely get an artist to work with you on.
That's a great idea, actually. Yeah, you don't think of it like that, because it's essentially an art installation. I mean, it's not really a garden that anyone would actually have, because, well, firstly, you can never plant that close to each other. It would be a nightmare. But it is. It's an art installation, and it should very much be viewed that way.
Although maybe I disagree with you a bit. I think to say it's only that makes it something potentially that gives it an excuse to be wasteful. And certainly for me, and I know for Hugo with his past gardens and us going forward, and I know for a lot of other designers, where that garden goes to afterwards for its final life is really important. So that garden went to a much larger site, so it could, that planting could spread out, which was for the Wildfowl and Wetland Trust I'm having such a brain moment.
I think I just sort of call it COVID brain, which is
it's just
it just takes harder for the cogs to turn. It takes longer. Yeah, it's not even harder, so you haven't said the wrong word there. It takes longer for the
for but the cogs. we took it up there, and it's still there, and people enjoy, and it should be there, you know, to invest time to grow plants and those beautiful jack pines, and you know, the sort of resources it takes to put that garden together and grow all those amazing plants, it would be immoral and irresponsible for them not to go on. So yes, it is an installation, but it must have it's an installation with a final life, so it can't be something that can't be reused. I feel that's important anyway, but I think increasingly
It's been a big,
you know,
change,
the public are asking about and rightly so.
Yeah, definitely, because it used to be incredibly wasteful. Or they'd have a plant sale, I think, at the end of it, but so much of it just didn't go on anywhere. But now I think it's even part of the proposal, isn't it?
That you have it to is.
Yeah, which is a great change that they've created there. I think I see it more as, I guess, as a gardener. You know, it's just someone who goes in. If anyone's been there, it's a ruddy nightmare, because they just want it to look like that. You're like, oh, God.
Just watch it on the telly. Just watch it on the telly.
Yeah, just watch it on
the
telly.
Too many crowds.
Just don't try and replicate it. It's fine.
Too many crowds.
This whole last year has massively highlighted how important green spaces are to us. I mean, it couldn't have happened in a more brutal way.
No.
But it's basically been the only thing that we've been able to do is go out for a walk and whatever, and so people obviously will want to seek out those sorts of spaces where it's a bit calmer and a bit, I think, less grey, I suppose. Because I know that you live in London, in East London, and I know you pretty well, and but I know that you go off almost every weekend, usually to somewhere green, or, you know, very frequently anyway, you seek out the hills and the walking and whatever, and then come back to London for work. And yeah. I know it's an important part of your being, really, and how you sort of keep on top of things. So, yeah, how has that been for you to not have that?
Truthfully, it's been absolutely brutal and a struggle. And I think I'm probably, you know, I think we all feel this final lockdown has been deeply unpleasant. And I am a fortunate person who has a small garden and is working and is not homeschooling. And it has been an enormous mental health struggle, I would say. Mm. And to go into those places that sort of give you space and salve your soul and recharge it. That has been really hard. And it has been. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And I think I was really, you know, we were really fortunate that, so my girlfriend Katrina and I made a bit of a punt in the summer that what it might be like. And Hugh and I also have a project in the Highlands that I had to go and see. And I said to Hugo, can I go and stay? Do you mind if I set up a studio somewhere for a month? Yeah, of course, that sounds amazing. And we found a tiny little place on an island called Lismore, which is very lovely in the Hebrides, and kind of had this blissful month, which again I feel incredibly fortunate for. You know, if I'd craned my head to the left of the little studio I was working in, I could see, on a clear day, I could see Ben Nevis.
What?
Yeah. And we went, like, you know, swimming and boarding and walking and cycling and
wow,
I mean,
lovely.
It was, and I think without that, and I recognize that I'm really fortunate even to have that month, I think January and February would have been even harder than they were now. So
yeah, and there's not really a replacement for it, is there? You can't really sort of substitute it in for anything else. For me, I find nothing else can give me that same feeling, you know. But even, did you find being out there, it's probably quite different out there because it is so, I mean, it's so expansive, isn't it? But the feeling I know I get if I've spent longer than a couple of hours kind of outside on hills or whatever, it's sort of an expansive feeling like within myself. It's like, oh, I can breathe better again. Yeah. Or like my head clears, something just shifts. And there's no other way that I can get that, really. But I've found that because everything else around is so closed down, that it's just naturally kind of, it's just sort of closed me down as well. Mm. And in a way that it's been much harder to get that feeling. I've had glimmers of it, but nowhere near as often as I know I can get it. But what was it like in Scotland? Did it feel like you were further away from that, this sort of heavy feeling that we're all kind of living under?
Yeah, I did. I think also, you know, we're very conscious we were going to an island, and that has it, you know, and we had to be super responsible about it. And before we went, we were very, you know,
did you go in the summer, last summer?
No, we went end of September.
Ah, right.
So we sort of did, and we were meant to be getting married in September.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
beginning of October. And so we were a bit blue about that, and then we decided to have this little escapade, and we were really good for a couple of weeks. We kind of kept ourselves to ourselves before we went, because they're an island communities, you know, you have to really respect that there is no, Lismore has, you know, it's tiny, it doesn't have a hospital. But yeah, you're right, you feel you can breathe and things lift. And you have a different sense. I think it just puts you in perspective a bit when you're in the jaws of this amazing granite landscape of water and, you know, water and mountains and snow, and it's kind of fierce and muscular and beautiful. And then the sky comes up in the morning and it's blood red. You know, it sort of puts things into perspective, and I think sometimes we need those things. And it's really hard to have perspective when you're then in a much smaller space. Sometimes things then get, I don't know if you find it, but then your reaction, I have found that it's sometimes quite hard when you've been, you feel cooped up, or you react you react in a different way than perhaps you might otherwise. I don't know if you found that.
Definitely, absolutely, yeah. It's kind of just reach a level of, it's just everything's more stressed, and you can sort of touch the roof of overwhelm much more quickly. Totally. And it's just because you can't find your car keys.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, oh, what? This shouldn't be this hard.
Yeah, but I think you're right. It's much closer to the surface, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
feels
exactly.
And the sort of anxiety. And I do, you know, sort of anxiety is definitely part of my personality. And interestingly, in the first lockdown, I felt incredibly calm. It felt like a sort of enormous privilege to be home for 2 or 3 months, and probably I hadn't been home for any more than 10 days at a time for 15, 20 years of my working life. And
wow.
So to sort of settle and be in my skin and in my place and with the person I love felt like, and the weather was beautiful, and we're gardeners, and we were, and it's just coming into spring, and we're all, you know, like, oh God, it's glorious. You know, I get the opportunity to do things that maybe I don't otherwise get to do so much, because it's our busiest time at work. But I don't feel that right now. Truthfully, I don't know if you do, but I'm really trying to force myself to feel the joy of spring. And it feels still a bit like, whew, dig deep for the Sisu on this one.
Yeah, I think it's going to just take some recovery. I mean, even if things sort of lifted quite quickly, even that would be, it's just such a spin out.
Well, I think that's right. And
yeah, you're like, wait, what? And that was going to be freaky. And
I sort of sit there thinking, am I actually going to be able to manage all the busyness of everyday life? It's actually the thought of that is giving me anxiety.
Yeah, exactly. Me too.
I want to see people, but I'm really enjoying sitting in my room really quietly because I don't know how to do anything else, because that's what I've done.
Exactly.
Not quiet, but you know. It is the silver lining that people value their green space. And I think contractors are busy, gardeners are busy, horticulturists are busy, plants people are busy, nurseries are busy. I mean, how amazing was it that this time last year, all those independent nurseries were the most popular people in the country? And like, what all of us in our world knew, we were like, yes, go on,
we rule the world. I know.
And,
and
all those nurseries
saying,
were,
how do I grow stuff, what do I do? Oh yeah, here we go.
And I heard from I was in a committee meeting at RHS, and I can't quite remember the exact data, but it's something like their website, the hits from the 29 to 39 age group just went absolutely crackers. Yeah. And the exciting thing is how you then keep that momentum and keep a new generation of people, or people who weren't previously interested in gardening, engaged in it.
Yeah.
And I think that's for all of us to sort of think about and encourage.
Yeah,
and,
definitely.
But I think once you've been bitten by the bug, you understand, you get it, then you don't lose it.
Exactly. If it takes, it takes, doesn't it? And there's no going back.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just mentioned there that you're on a board, a committee for the RHS.
Yeah.
What is that for? What's your role?
So I have been asked to join the nominations and appointments committee at the RHS, which basically looks at who will be, you know, the RHS has a huge governance structure, and is kind of, you know, whether that's a horticultural committees, commercial advisory groups, and some incredibly talented people. And so I'm just really keen to make sure that the views of different people are reflected. And I think that is definitely a shift in the RHS as well, that perhaps the RHS becomes more representative of the kind of diversity of people actually doing gardening than perhaps it has been. And
for many reasons, I mean, for all of the things that have come up over the last years, I mean, diversity is a massive one. And when you do look at the world of horticulture, you do see a wash of white. It's just, yeah.
Well, let's be really clear. I don't think you see a wash of white. I think when you see the world of published horticulture, and I think there's an awful lot of different people, you know, involved in community gardens, allotments, gardening at home.
Absolutely.
But I don't think people are kind of...
The representation.
That's not being pulled across into how people are represented. You know, we are just not getting black people, people of colour, in the same way. Although that is starting to happen, which is brilliant. And as you say, I think that has been one of the great moments of the past kind of 12 months, that people have had to really, you know, consider their own action or inaction and how they are an active ally. You know, it is not enough anymore to say I am not racist. You have to be, in this is my view, anti-racist, or, you know, I'm not homophobic. I want you to be an active ally of the LGBT community. And I think the, you know, recent kind of reaction around the sort of tragic murder in Clapham and the women's safety movement, it's the same thing. It is not enough anymore to say, well,
it's not me,
you
mate.
Know, yeah. It's not enough to be sort of a passive onlooker that says, oh, I don't think that. You have to be you have to get involved and be an ally. Small things that make a big difference. So that is something that we all do every day. And for me, that is, I'm asked quite a lot to be on panels, or, you know, to write pieces that are part of, you know, our media, our specific media. And what I do try to do is say, ask who else is on the panel and say, I'd rather, if that is an all-white panel, that my place goes to a person of colour or a black person, because I feel that it is really important that we all take responsibility and do our bit. And that's just, you know, one thing. And I'm sure we can all do better.
Definitely.
I think there's no excuse for it now. Truthfully, I think there's no excuse for a conference of 10 speakers all to look the same.
My final question to you, Charlotte Harris, is...
Yes, Charlotte Pets.
What is the first thing, or where is the first place you'll go as soon as you're allowed to do so?
I mean, that's a really good question. I mean, I know I should probably say something terribly worthy and probably quite horticultural, but truthfully, I'm absolutely desperate for a pint in a pub, in a proper pub. I think that'll be the first thing. And then I'll reflect, and then I'll go, oh, there's too many people out, I'm going home.
Yeah, exactly. Like it was.
Take it slow. I went to see a project in Birmingham a couple of weeks ago, and was going through Euston Station, and it felt like a ghost town. And I was thinking, I'm not sure I'm quite ready for this to go back to Euston as it was. So, yeah, I might need to take that one slowly. What am I good apart from that? Apart from the pint in the pub. What about you? What are you going to do?
Oh, man. Well, absolutely that. I'm desperate to go for a pint in the pub. I can't wait. Other than that, I mean, I want to just go somewhere else. I was supposed to be going to Scotland in winter and we couldn't go and do more multi-day walking and just get that feeling back the heavy feeling just to lift for longer than tiny moments. I'm very much looking forward to that. Oh, and obviously seeing family, of course.
Yes, the ease.
I'm looking forward to ease of living, returning, essentially.
Yeah, I'm quite also looking forward to, I'm sure it actually won't happen for quite a while, but not using hand sanitizer, because it's I might have, you know, more hand cream and more working hands kicking around than anything else, but I'm just really ready not to use it.
Do you think your appreciation, probably for what you do and the spaces that you create, and also to the places that you go to, do you think your appreciation has deepened?
Yeah, I do. until it's taken away, you can be absolutely moved by the sort of grandeur and majesty of the landscape and the amazing intricacies of nature, small and large. But I think, and you can think you appreciate it and in the moment, but actually I think it's when it's taken away that you go, this is important to me. This is really important to me, more important than I ever really imagined and I thought it was, but not to the degree it is. So yeah,
good luck with September. Very exciting. If it happens, I hope it happens. Who knows? It's still a little bit up in the air, I imagine.
Yeah, I think we won't, none of us will quite believe it until, you know, we're on site, and even then, right, you never know. But I hope it does. I think it'll be fun, and fun for lots of people and fun for lots of different reasons. And I think we all need a bit of a lift, and those happen in loads of different ways. But I hope Hampton Court happens. I know that that's when's that pitch for? July. So, you know, it could be a brilliant summer of floral wonder. Let's cross our fingers.
Yes, let's cross our fingers for a little bit of floral wonder. That was Charlotte Harris, and you can find her across the socials on @CharloHarris, and her company with Hugo is Harris Bug Studios. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to get in touch with the show, you can email growingwildreverb@gmail.com, or I am on Instagram @growingwildfm. Please do leave a rating, 5 stars preferably. Somebody's actually gone on since this last episode and given me a solid 3. So that was generous. Thanks, whoever that was. So obviously you don't notice the 5s, do you? All I went straight to was the 3. Also, you can support the show at www.kofi.com, which is ko-fi.com. And it's the equivalent of saying hello and buying me a coffee. Anything you can give is greatly appreciated, and it just helps me to be able to continue to make the show. We have one more episode left in this run, which will be out very soon. But until then, stay safe, go well. See you soon.